Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston, tonight I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest of them all, our good pal BFD. How are you doing tonight, man?
Dude, so this has been a day. I've either been working or being at flamenco performances all day, like for 14 hours today, so man, it's been a day.
Caliente. Muy caliente.
Muy caliente.
Yeah. Well, did you know that the Houston Texans lost to the Baltimore Ravens today?
Wow. And they didn't only lose, it was kind of like ugly. I mean, it was like me naked, covered in Karo syrup and corn syrup at the same, or corn oil at the same time, ugly.
Which one has the highest density?
Oh, it's the Karo syrup, easily, yeah. Because of corn oil, yeah.
Corn oil on the bottom, then you, then Karo syrup on top?
Yeah.
I guess it's the other way around. That's not how density works. Karo syrup, then you, then the corn syrup on top.
And it's just all squishy and kind of nasty. And that was like the Texas performance today.
Yeah, it was very bad. It was really bad. They lost 41-7. Kind of the way this game played out, where that the Ravens had two possessions. Each one was a field goal attempt. They missed one. The other one was a fake that they failed to convert on. Watson had that weird fumble that he gave away on, and then they had that. Then they punted after going run. No. They didn't get it on the fourth down after going run. Fourth and two, Hail Mary the core in the end zone. That became an interception. Or not an interception, but an incomplete pass. That was a pass interference penalty that wasn't called. So let's start there, because a lot of this, like, they lost 41-7, and that was an obvious pass interference penalty. I've watched a lot of football this year. And not just like Texans football, but football all over the place. And it's every time these come up and the coach challenges it, you know they're going to lose it. The only one I've actually seen get overturned was Arizona against Tampa Bay. And the cornerback fell down, death rolled in the back of Mike Evans' legs and took him out on a corner pass to the end zone. That's the only one I've ever seen overturned so far this year. And there's been like six or so or whatever. But that was a play they weren't going to overturn. It was kind of obvious that they were. He throws the challenge flag. It doesn't overturn. The Texans are still, like, it's still 0-0 whenever they get the ball back again. So, like, maybe they get 3 points, maybe they get 7 points, and they have a 7-point lead. But do you think that call had any sort of effect or ramifications, like, on, like, who won and lost this game?
I love this question because, in my never humble opinion, there are only two games that have been decided by referees. Game number one, the NFC Championship game last year. I mean, clearly, you know, that was a major DPI on, it was Calhoun, right?
It was, it was Roby.
Roby, yes.
Yeah.
They
both have three names, you know.
Exactly. So I mix them up sometimes. That one, that was decided by the refs. The only other game that's ever been decided by the refs, in my opinion, again, is the 1979 Houston Oilers versus Pittsburgh Steelers game, because Mike Renfro's toes are still in bounds. Look, if you lose a game by 34 points, it's not the refs' fault. It means you got owned in every phase of the game. And Carlos Hyde had, like, what, a 40-yard touchdown run at the end of the game with, like, 4 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, where Earl Thomas just, like, completely ran away also. And he's like, nah, I'm okay.
Yeah, he was just – nobody knew when to get hurt.
Yeah.
But at least we had Deshaun Watson in there at the time. So, look, you get wiped out that badly, it's not the ref's fault. You can use all the speeches, logic that you want on this sort of thing, but nah.
Yeah, I mean –
the Houston Texans got owned.
Yeah, they got completely beat. So there are offensive possessions in the first half. Fumble, 5 plays, 9 yards. Downs, 8 plays, 34 yards. And again, that drive that led to the 4th and 2, it went power right, or they picked up 5 yards. Then went outside zone right, or they got 4 yards. 3rd and 1, they go 6 offensive line set. Robert Johnson's there as, like, the, I guess, the 6th tackle on the left side line. He blocks the wrong guy. Matthew Judon, you know, comes into the C gap, which is where he should be blocking. and he makes that tackle for a loss, and you have 4th and 2, and Watson tries to make a play, and would have if it was actually called correctly, but it wasn't. Then from that point on, they went punt, and those are both 3 and outs where they go into a long third down situation. So the first one went they have those 2 punts in a row. Then Baltimore scores 2 touchdowns. It's 14-0, end of half, and they miss that field goal. And they had 2 timeouts. They had 1 timeout left on that last drive. They lost one of the challenge, and they also had that end of like quarter timeout because the Ravens picked up on that zone read option they were about to run. It's like, oh, yeah, Fells is a flex wing tight end. They're going to run the zone read. Okay, we know exactly what they're doing. So that's how the first half played out. They were down 14-0. What problems did you see with the offense in this first half? Was it just like the Ravens have a really great defense and they're more talented than Houston? Was it a really great game plan by Baltimore? Was it the pass rush was so overwhelming? Was it Bill O'Brien's play calling? What did you see in this first half why the Texans were just unable to get off the ground completely?
I'll just say yes, because it was a combination of all those things. I think the one thing that really stood out for me was the – once again, Bill O'Brien's just complete obsession with trying to establish the run. So we saw a lot of series where it was run, pass. And Carlos Hyde, he had that 40-yard run. Like, if you look at his stats on paper, he had a great game on paper. But the problem is when outside of that 40-yard run, he was – I want to look this up to make it up. He was 8-4-34. So he was like 3 yards a carry. That does not work. Yeah, yes, it does. 8-for-24, not 34.
Yeah, that's 3 yards a carry.
Thank you. Yeah, so he was 3 yards a carry. So, I mean, again, he had a Chris Johnson kind of game, and that's been Carlos Hyde's problem the entire, you know, season, is that he's going to go 2-3 yards, and then he's going to bust out an 18-yarder. And so his success rate is great, according to Pro Football Focus, Football Outsiders, I'm sorry. But his DVOA is negative. His DYAR is negative. Look, the play calling was trash. But the other thing is we weren't protecting Deshaun Watson at all. And a lot of the big reason for that is because we were running the same stuff we've been running the past 2 weeks. So the Ravens, it's like, this must have been like the scene in Waterboy where like they're laughing at Henry Winkler's play calling because they've got the book in front of them and they're calling everything before Henry Winkler can.
Yeah.
That's what this game must have been like. It was just like, oh, this is what we're going to do. We're just going to cover it up and the Texans aren't going to do anything.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. Those 2 punts I was talking about, the first drive went 1st and 10 sacked. Then it went penalty Brandon Williams. It looked like Watson's tooth got knocked out. And like, Ram Williams' elbow hitting you is like getting hit in the head with a frozen turkey. Like, it's enormous.
He's a big dude.
He's 30. Like, he's been awesome. Ram Williams did this thing where I've never seen him do this before, but he was playing, two gapping, and he held the center and guard each with one arm and just held him there. And like, he's not the same level player, but he got a live interior push, and they didn't really, like, Nick Martin and Sharping both had problems with him. But yeah, that drive, they went 1st and 10, run for 6, 2nd and 4, run for 1, 3rd and 3. Then they had the incomplete pass, but they had a legal formation penalty that was declined. But they bring the blitz, Watson's pressure, the pass is short. The next drive, they went 1st and 10, pass for 18, 1st and 10, run for 4, 2nd and 6, sack for -9, 3rd and 15, sack for 0. And like, they had, you know, they have those. I think the biggest problem with this offense is they have just like too many drives that were just bad. Like, it's like 1st and 10's a record stopping run call that doesn't work out. And then 2nd and 10's a negative player penalty. And then they're in 3rd and long and they're punting. You're like, what? You know, there's just too many bad plays that this team runs. Personally, though, like, after going back and watching the game, I think the biggest problem with the offense was that it was stale. It was predictable. And it was the same sort of concepts and routes that we've been seeing for, you know, 6 weeks or so now. Like, every time they ran that little zone replay, the Ravens had one. Like, every time it looks the same, it's Darren Fells in a tight end flex wing position. He motions across the formation, the ball snap, and Watson fakes the handoff to him, then he runs out that direction. And so then you have the linebacker playing Fells, and then you have a safety come down for the flat, and then Watson has nowhere to go, and so he's just throwing the ball at, you know, Fells' feet, or he's getting sacked and trying to make something happen, like Judon was able to bring him down that one play too. And then they watching it live, like, I know if you read the hair of the dog thread tomorrow, there's going to be a lot of stuff like, this offense is stupid, they're not taking any chances. And going back and watching again, they did take chances, but the problem was that the chances they took looked just like everything we've seen for the last 6 weeks. a lot of it looks a lot like the Atlanta game, where you have Hopkins and the number two wide receiver on opposite sidelines, and they're running deep crossing routes. They're making the safety make a decision. But if it's, you know, obvious passing situations and you have two safeties deep back there, and they're playing, or they're playing man coverage, and you're playing a team like Baltimore that has the cornerbacks that can run with your wide receivers like that, it didn't work. You know, Watson spent a lot of time with two guys running downfield and a dump off that wasn't open, holding onto the ball, and Watson like tries to make plays happen. That's what makes him so special. And like, but there just wasn't a lot of hot route stuff at all either. And then a lot of their quick passing was just really boring too. It was like DeAndre Hopkins in the slot running posts or running slants, and then Baltimore started picking up on those too after the first drive, and those plays were gone. And like, it was just the same stuff we've been seeing for 6 weeks. And coming off the bye too, like they were to come out with the same offense they've been running for, you know, 6 weeks now or so, with not anything new or interesting, nothing different at all. Just playing like Ryan Baltimore's hands with these long third downs that they faced every time. It was obscene and it was very stupid. And I don't really think it was like a talent issue or the Baltimore Ravens have like a, you know, like such an amazing pass defense. I think it was just a very predictable offense that, you know, teams have been seeing for 6 or 7 weeks now with nothing new added in.
Well, we talked about it last week, is that even Jacksonville was starting to pick up on it, was playing that kind of that RPO with Fells being the primary pass option at that point in time. We talked about it last week. I mean, we picked up on it. So are you telling me that Harbaugh's not going to go into the film room and say, hey guys, they're going to do this a whole lot and they're going to stop, not going to stop it. We're going to do this differently in order to cut it down. That's all that Baltimore did, I think, tonight or today, was they took the obvious and they shut it down. And Bill O'Brien, once again, was just like, shrug.
Yeah. Like, this is what we do. I know that one player you're talking about, that Jacksonville game, was in the third quarter where they ran. It's like, there's Najee Good there, and then there's like Miles Jack there. And they beat him with it over and over again. But instead of there being one linebacker isolated in the alley, there's two linebackers. And like, Fells is fine, but he's not going to beat man coverage in the slot at all. And like, he's big and strong and can catch like flat routes and run through a guy for a couple extra yards. He's a good red zone target, but he's not like, he can't be really used any other way. And so you see him out there like, okay, I think I know what they're going to do. They're running it, he's going to pass protect, or he's going to run a flat route, or they're going to do this little zone replay. And it's a great point, too, talking about the Jacksonville game, was that this offense has worked really well. That, you know, the land game was different, but since the Kansas City game, playing against, I can't say his name at all, Amuse, number 48, that linebacker Baltimore has, he's the reason why they didn't re-sign C.J. Mosley. Like, he can blitz, he can stop the run, he can play the pass, he can do everything. And Josh Bynes is slow, but he's, like, really smart, and the Ravens have a really smart defense. They have a smart team. Playing the Ravens linebackers and playing their front, which has been bad, like, they have one pass rusher in Judon and, like, a bunch of strong guys in the interior. Playing them is a lot different than playing Ben Niemann, playing Anthony Morrow, playing Austin Kalichar, who came and covered Ryan Griffin. And so it kind of reminds me of last year when we talked a lot about, oh, they're just playing bad run defense. It's like, oh, the offense is working well because they're playing against teams with really bad linebacker groups. And like, they're, it's kind of a shame they couldn't play Cincinnati, because Cincinnati have been perfect for them to play too. Another awful linebacker team. And like, now they're playing against a smart defense, and that same sort of stuff that's been working for, you know, 5 weeks, 6 weeks or so now, just completely came to a halt. And it kind of reminded me of the Colts game that way too, where Darius Leonard's back and they have Anthony Walker there, and they have fast, smart linebackers, and they have a good defensive coordinator in Eberflus, and that sort of stuff didn't work. And then, but luckily in that game, it was close in the third quarter, where they were able to, you know, break some passes deep and go to more of a spread offense that worked out better. But yeah, like, Houston was predictable. They were stale. And this was actually like a team that had, that was smart and had like speed and good linebacker play that could deal with what they've been doing for so long.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the indie game a little bit later in the cast, but a lot of what you saw today, I mean, Bill O'Brien had 2 weeks to prepare for this game today, and we saw how absolutely stale it is. I mean, this is the NFL. People are watching the film. You got really smart guys. It's, again, it's just not like it's 1973 where you're trying to reel up the film from one camera angle and have your entire team watch this one camera angle for the entire game to prepare for the next week. No, things are different. And that's what how Bill O'Brien treated this game today. He treated it like, like nobody's going to see these things we're doing. I mean, who's going to catch on to this? That's what was the most frustrating thing about the game the entire time, was like, dude, you've been doing this. We see it. You're going to have to throw wrinkles in, and Bill O'Brien cannot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there was that part of it. There's also this idea that kind of came up because Watson had a bad game. If you look here at the numbers with Watson, he was 18 of 29, 169 yards, one reception, sacked six times, a QBR of 9. I don't think I've ever seen a QBR of 9 before. So, and then, what?
He was sacked 7 times. McCarron
was sacked once. He was sacked 6 times. He was sacked 5 times in the first half, and then he was sacked once, and then McCarron was sacked once, too. And so, like, I don't know, do you have any blame at all for Watson for this game? Like, do you think he had a bad game, or do you think this is just more off of he didn't really have any options, and he did what he typically does, which was try make plays, and he had that one fumble. And he had that try throw back to Carlos Hyde that worked well against Oakland. Nobody cared then, but now it turns into an interception this game. Like, what did you think about Watson's performance this time?
I think that if you're relying upon Deshaun Watson to save your butt for every game, like Bill O'Brien does these days, sometimes he's just not going to be able to do it. And especially after he twisted his ankle, he did not look like the same guy in the second half. Mm-hmm. He did not have the quicks. He did not have the wizardry, right? Part of Deshaun Watson's game is being able to get out of like totally inescapable situations and make a play downfield. And they couldn't in the second half. So I blame Deshaun Watson partly, but here's the thing. The only coach in the NFL capable of shutting down Deshaun Watson is Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, and like entering this game too, I thought Baltimore was going to win. I thought they were the better team. I thought like Houston matched up well, but I thought they would have problems against Baltimore's quick passing offense, and they did. But I was like, it's Deshaun Watson. Like, I'm still not used to like watching the Texans with him, where I'm like, oh yeah, like they can just win games because he's just really good, you know, and he's going to make plays nobody else can make. And he does it routinely. And this game, he didn't make those plays at all, you know? Like, it was all those attempts that he had didn't happen. He had that one rollout, and it looked just like the Oakland play, you know? The guy has him low, and he kind of goes against the grain to try to come out of it, and that time he actually hurt his ankle. And that sack was by Jalen Ferguson, and that was a play where Tyus Howard tries to help out the B-gap for no reason. Ferguson gets into his chest and is able to pick up the sack there for it, too. So the one of the things that I think Baltimore did really well, too, in this game, pass defensively, is that Houston was 2 of 10 on third downs, and consistently Houston was in 3rd and 2 in passing, 3rd and 6 in passing, 3rd and 12 in passing, and the Ravens don't have a good pass rush. They have a bad pass rush. Their pass rush is Matthew Judon, and like that's it. Like, they missed Pernell McPhee. It's 2019, and they're missing Pernell McPhee right now. They signed Demarcus Petco off waivers because they need some, like, a little bit of juice on the interior even. But whenever you're facing, you know, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 8, and you know it's coming. The Ravens been blitzing a ton on third down, and it's not like their blitzes were even that creative. All they did was just overload one side of the line of scrimmage and create free rushers. Or whenever the running back stayed in the block, they would send those delay blitzes too. And the Texans didn't pick it up well. You know, they had 5 sacks. I think only like 2 of the sacks were actual, like, this guy lost his pass rushing move. The rest of them were, you have an offensive line who's been injured, who's been rotating in and out, who had y'all picking up the blitz to start the year, and they started playing together. They got better at picking up blitzes. The pass protection got better, but now Howard's back. Now Tunsil's back. Now, you know, I guess the interior's been kind of self for a little while now. But now you have these guys back, and they're not used to playing with each other all over again. And so that was a big problem. It's just like they had no idea how to pick up the blitzes, and then the Texans still don't have, like, a hot route for Watson either. Like, I know Cutie had that one bad drop, but, like, he needs to be using this offense more, because whenever they face 3rd and 6 and the blitz comes, they don't have anywhere to go with the ball. And whenever Hopkins is double-teamed and he can't get open on a post route, like, that's their offense on third down. It's Hopkins slant routes or Hopkins post routes. And whenever teams double him up on there or sit in the middle of the field and that throw's gone, like, he's trapped. Like, he doesn't know what to do in those situations.
Yeah, one thing that really jumped out to me, it was that first Watson sack of the game. That was the one that really jumped out to me because they had so much pressure from so many people. But it was Judon who kind of single-handedly created that. He broke down the pocket, and so everybody was kind of feasting after that. Is that they had one guy who could do enough damage that could – well, he did enough damage in order to make sure that the Texans – like, after that sack, Watson was like, kind of scared – I don't know, maybe that's just me projecting, But after that sack, like, Watson was, like, terrified the rest of the game, and so he was a little bit gun-shy. Now, look, if you've got that offensive line in front of you, of course you're going to be a little bit gun-shy, but I don't know. Is that projection, Matt?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really think he ever looked scared at all. I just think, like, the blitz was coming, and he didn't have any options, really. You know, and, like, whenever, and like a lot of these sacks, too, there's only two routes and a dump-off to Duke Johnson right. after he's blocking, and there's two guys there. And I think the Ravens were just completely all over with what they were running. It's going to be interesting, too, whenever the video comes out and you watch the sideline angles and be like, yeah, there's two guys on Hopkins, two guys on Stills. There's one check down here, and he has nowhere to go with the ball. And rather than, like, escape and throw out bounce, he's trying to make plays happen. And, you know, part of that's, like, when you're down 14-0, you have to do something. And like, all the onus goes on to Watson to make that happen. And, you know, I guess you can say he did too much, whatever, but I disagree because that's what this team is based around. It's based on Watson being incredible and spectacular and unbelievable. And on the off times that he isn't, you know, you'd hope that he can't. There's only so many, like, whenever the talent differential is, like, how it is, where, like, I guess you can say Baltimore is a slightly more talented team, but it's not an enormous gap. But whenever you're the less talented team, like, you have to have better game plan and coaching. And you can't get away with, like, what you were doing against defenses like Oakland's and against defenses like Kansas City and defenses like Jacksonville's.
Yeah, and then you see that they go up 21-0, and then our next play after that
for
is
run.
Carlos
First
Hyde
and 10 run.
For two
yeah.
yards. And it's like, okay, we have no sense of urgency. We have no understanding of what's going on in this game. We're going to just give the ball to Carlos Hyde. I don't know if I've ever been more frustrated by a single play in a long time than that one, Matt.
Yeah, and they were still doing like in the fourth quarter too. It's kind of like sometimes I'll lie down, I'll be like, I'm so mad that I'm trapped in this skeleton, in these bones, constrained to these guts. It's like, I just want to be like a cloud, you know, just be a consciousness floating through the galaxy or the universe, I should say. And like that run's like, oh yeah, there's nothing at all, you know, like there's nothing Watson can do. There's nothing this team can do when you run the ball in first and 10, when you're down by 21. Like, what are we doing here anymore? You know, especially against like, and you should go back. If you go back and watch the game, whether it's you, I'm talking to BFD or our beautiful listeners out there, go back and watch it and just like watch their first down boxes they're facing. Like, there's nowhere to go. And the Texans had they had no blocking in the interior at all either. Like Sharping, Fulton, and Martin couldn't do anything against Bram Williams. Chris Wormley, like there was one play where Wormley's just extending Howard out like 2 yards, just waiting for the back to come to him. And they had no push on the interior. And like the running game, like you're like, okay, well, look, they had this many yards on this many carries, and they're like 12th in rush offense DVOA. But it's a running attack set by their passing attack, and they don't have the run offense that can just be like, you know, we have six down linemen, and we're gonna get 4 yards every play. They don't have that sort of offensive line. They don't have that sort of rushing attack. And like Baltimore ate up, and Baltimore's like 26th in run defense DVOA. I think the number is skewed by that Nick Chubb game against Cleveland. But it's not. They don't have a great like vanilla rushing attack. Their rushing attack's great when everything else sets it up.
So yeah, Aaron Rice, I'm sorry, just put this out. The Ravens are the first team ever to complete a game against the Texans without punting or turning the ball over. So when you look at this game, and we've been on the offensive side of the ball a lot. Look, the fact is, we still gave up 41 points, and hey, Big Matt, did you know that Jadeveon Clowney might look really good in a Texans uniform about right now?
Oh, is this where you talk about Clowney? So,
or the defensive line, or the fact that we can't do anything. I mean, Merciless has not done anything. DJ Reader has not done anything. Like, this defense cannot do anything at this point in time.
Yeah, so the Ravens had 7.7 yards of play. I think Jackson was credited being sacked once. It was that play where Brent Scarlett just ran straight at him. And on that kind of like mesh play, though, I think it looked like play action. And he just ran straight up and, like, you know, buried him really well. But, yeah, like, that was kind of the argument for Clown. Like, after Watt was injured, we had this conversation. It's like, well, I'm glad we're done. Like, we can stop having this conversation that the Clowney trade was good because they're able to get assets and they were going to keep him anyways. And keeping Clowney's dumb because of his injury history. He doesn't get 10 sacks a year and all that sort of stuff. But part of the reason to keep Clowney instead of Watt is that Clowney has been a healthy player. He's 26. He's in the prime of his career. Like Watt, who even before this injury this season, he had two season-ending injuries in the last 3 years. And he just kind of felt like whatever you got from Watt's a bonus. Clowney's been dealing with so much in Seattle. Like, it's absurd. Like, like he'll come through the backfield and two pullers hit him at once and things like that. and last week in San Francisco, he finally had that like breakout game. He had a touchdown, a fumble recovery, 5 quarterback hits, 10 quarterback pressures, including your sacks, hurries, knockdowns. He also had 5 tackles all solo, and he was completely unbelievable. And this is also against Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey, not like bad tackles. These are, you know, this is a good tackle combination too. And so like one of the problems the Texans have with their run defense is that they only have created 35 tackles at the line of scrimmage or less, which is tied 32nd with Kansas City. And a lot of that had to do with Clowney. Like, he's not there knocking out 3 pullers at the same time and allowing everybody else to come rush them back to make tackles for a loss. And they weren't winning one-on-one battles at all on the defensive line whenever the Ravens were rushing it. And then the pass rush, like, it doesn't exist. Like, there's nothing there. Like, go back and watch Merciless try and pass rush against Ronnie Stanley. Like, it's like watching, like, a varsity versus a JV player. Like, Merciless just runs into him, he extends, and he spins right in front of him, and Stanley catches him again. Like, there's nothing there at all to it.
Well, Stanley's probably the best left tackle in the league right now. And Marshall Yanda, of course, is one of the best guards in the league right now. So, you know, we're going against really good players. So I wouldn't not expect that we would have a lot of success against those guys. But today was just...
I mean, there was zero. Like, there was zero, you know. Yeah. Like, I was watching it, and there was, like, one player was like, that's kind of pressure. And I watched the play against, like, no, it's just, like, constricted. But Jackson steps up, throws cleanly, and throws that, you know, 3rd and 17 touchdown pass to Mark Andrews, or it was either to Andrews or it was the other one to Seth Roberts. You know, like there was no rush at all whatsoever. And I was expecting it for there to be one against this offensive line, but like whenever you don't have top end talent and like you're running out pass rushing combinations of Winnie Merciless, Carlos Watkins, DJ Reader, and Charles Omenehu, like that's what you get. Like you're not going to get a rush. And even against like Jacksonville, they couldn't get a rush. And I saw like some like box score analysis, like, oh well, they had 4 sacks. I'm not too worried about the passers that lot. It's like, yeah, those sacks took 4.5-5 seconds, and then she's like running into his own offensive lineman on those plays.
Yeah. That's the most frustrating thing about all of this is that DJ Reader was successful early because, well, he had JJ Watt next to him, and Whitney Merciless was making things happen. And now that DJ Reader's been shut down. Well, then Whitney Merciless is not doing as well because DJ Reader's not creating that inside pressure. He's not causing the quarterback to go outside where Merciless can get him. There's no JJ Watt. There's nothing there. I mean, so once again, when people start talking about, it just infuriates me to see people still say we don't need Jadeveon Clowney on this roster. This would be a completely different defense today, and I just want to pull my hair out, and I have none left.
Yeah, I mean, like, they don't have a top 10 pass rush anymore. And, well, I guess talking about Reader real fast, too. Like, that even goes back to Merciless, though. Like, Reader creates sacks for Merciless. These are plays where he's collapsing right. The pocket, he's forcing the quarterback back, and he's, like, forcing Drew Brees directly back into Merciless. And then Merciless is able to make some strip sacks like he did against Minshew and Kyle Allen, those sorts of things. And it's all because he has these long, looping rushes where whenever the interior is collapsing, it works out very well, but whenever it isn't, it doesn't. I think the biggest problem with Reader, though, right now is that he's having to defend the run so much that whenever it comes to third down, like, he's exhausted. Like, he doesn't have any juice at all. And then they're also rushing him more as a one technique, too, and, like, holding down the interior so the quarterback tries to scramble. He can kind of pop off and make some tackles, too. But that Chargers game, he did a really good job, you know, being a wide three technique against Dan Feeney and making, you know, a sack and a half that game. He's not really doing that anymore, but I think it kind of goes back to the fact that he's cleaning things up, and they want him to collapse the pocket, force the quarterback backwards, and then allow Martin and allow Merciless to come with those wide looping rushes and those edge rushes to sack the quarterback from behind. And it hasn't worked. I think just Reader's tired from all the run stopping he's having to do.
Yeah, because we're putting him in a role that he's supposed to be the nose tackle on the inside during running.
And he's pretty much playing 3-4-D now that Watt's out too. Like, because right. Like Omenehu can't, he doesn't know how to defend the run. Like, he gets trapped a lot. He runs in the backfield and blocked and gets stuck. He's just lost out there a lot of times. Like, they love letting Omenehu run free.
Yep, and then we're expecting Reader to play defensive end, 5 tech at times as well. I mean, seriously, like, the dude only has so many plays a game in him. I mean, he's a huge dude. He does a great job. But we have no more depth. We have no more J.J. Watt, which by itself is a huge problem. So now we're having to rely on Blackson. We're having to rely on Dunn. We're having to rely on Watkins. These guys aren't difference makers at any level.
Yeah, or even in Blackson, you know, I wrote the article whenever they re-signed him for 4 years, $16 million or whatever. I'm like, he doesn't do anything. Like, he's like, he holds the run at 3-4 defensive end position. But it's like, when you have Clowney and Merciless and McKinney and Reeder and Cunningham, like, you don't need to pay $4 million if somebody can stop the run. That $4 million can go to, and that $7 million they sent for Clowney is $11 million. Well, that was 3 years ago, you know, or 4 years ago.
Still bitter.
But, I mean, they sent $7 million in the Clowney trade. They give Blackson $4 million, and that's $11 million of salary. It's like, yeah, that's Sheldon Richardson right there. That's another, that's Ndamukong Suh for a season. You know, like, that's a big difference. And yeah, this team, it doesn't have a lot of depth, doesn't have a lot of juice at all. Yeah, it's, I mean, like, I didn't expect the pass just to be good if it's worse. And I want to talk about the secondary now, because the Ravens have been awesome this year on short passing games. So any throws less than 15 yards, Jackson was 75% completion percentage, 1,400 yards, 7 yards an attempt, 11 touchdowns with 3 interceptions. The Texans' pass defense on short pass attempts, a completion percentage allowed of 73.5%, 2,010 yards, 15 touchdowns to 2 interceptions allowed, 7.1 yards attempt. I just put yikes here in bold whenever I was writing the preview. And after I saw that, I'm like, yeah, I think Baltimore is going to win this game. And then they're also short pass defense, DVOA, 6.8%, which is 27th. Against the deep pass, negative 1.8%, which is 6th. And that number was kind of surprising looking at that. But this is a team that's been, you know, attacked well by teams who throw short passes well instead of do what Jacksonville did, which is just throw flat routes to the tight end or right. to Leonard Fournette, right. you know. And Jackson did a great job. Like, his ball placement was absurd. But he was 17 of 24, 222 yards, 4 touchdowns, a QBR of 93. At one point, he had, I think, 11 completions in a row, like after those two field goal attempts they had in the first quarter. And then they just went on a tear, and they scored, what, 41 points? Like, after that point, they missed the two field goals, and it's just, like, 41 points after that. So, like, this secondary, it's going to get Bradley Roby back. They have Gary and Conley. It looks like Lion Johnson, you know, had suffered some sort of ankle injury. Justin Reed hurt his shoulder. They're playing Jaleel Adai. Mike Adams got knocked out with a concussion. With this pass rush, they're already, I think they're 24th in pass defense, DVOA. Like, how much worse can it get? And what are you expecting at all from this pass defense from this point on?
I just don't even have the words. I mean, they've been – Romeo Crennel has taken a lot of heat this year for some of the games that
which
have been –
I think is absurd.
Completely. I think that he's actually saving this defense. I think when you look at what the talent is on paper and what they're doing on the field, I think Romeo Crennel is doing an incredible job. And I just don't see where – especially losing Reed for my money is going to be a big deal.
So, I think he'll still play. He's been dealing with that shoulder all year long.
But at some point, yeah. He's going to say, "Now, Moss." So, I mean, I think, but it makes him a worse, you know, football player, even dealing with the shoulder injury. So, but oh my gosh. So don't blame Crennel. You know, blame the fact that he is using a bunch of guys. I mean, name the above average defensive players on the Texans. It's Reed, it's Cunningham, it's McKinney, it's Reeder. That's it.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I would say Roby's above average, but he's not a guy.
Oh, come on.
I would say he's above average, but he's not a guy who you want to be your cornerback number one. Like, he's above average in the sense that, yeah, like, he's maybe an 80 overall if you're playing Madden. You know what I mean? He's not, like, if he's your cornerback, he's not, like, an above average number one cornerback, but he's an above average cornerback. But he's hurt the hamstring injury anyway, so it doesn't matter. And he probably won't play this Thursday. It's pretty quick, so hopefully against New England he'll be out there.
Yeah, so look who your average guys are. It's Whitney Merciless. Wow, that's all I got. So when you look,
yeah, I guess so.
So everybody else, so that's five guys. So the other seven starters on this team, they're all below average. So the fact that Romeo Crennel is able to keep this team in games like the way he is pretty miraculous to me. So, you know, I'm not going to blame him. I'm going to blame the fact that if you want to call him William O'Brien or whatever, like really cool nickname you want to give the GM O'Brien, that he has given with the injuries and the stupid trades, that Romeo Crennel is working with trash.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. Yeah, and like, I mean, the coverage in this game, it kind of start off weird. Like, Baltimore, I mean, I just love their offense so much. And like, I like how they start their positions where they have, okay, we have Miles Boykin in a deep thread, and we have Lonnie Johnson Jr. Let's attack him twice. And they attacked him in off-man coverage. Like, these really aren't plays where you're like, want to throw a deep post at, but he's there. We're going to throw it deep. We're gonna take a shot early and see what we come up with. I really love that part of it, too. And then just like all the short stuff. I mean, the ball placement was absurd from Jackson. I mean, some of these throws that he's making, it's ridiculous. Like that throw he had to Willie Snead down like the right sideline where he leapt over the cornerback to call it. That one was pretty wild. And like, I don't think the coverage was all that bad this game, but it was, the ball placement was so great. But the problem is like the biggest problem I see with this pass defense is that they have a secondary that if you look hard enough and you drink enough Kool-Aid, you'd be like, this is a fine cornerback group or secondary whenever you have a good pass rush. If you have a top 10 pass rush, I would like this, you know, cornerback group when it's healthy. When you have the 25th best pass rush or the 30th best pass rush, it's hellacious. It's awful. You can't do much at all with it. And I think that's the biggest problem the Texans are going to face from here on out, is that Watt accounted for like, I think, 30% of their hurries. He didn't have the sacks, but he was creating all the pressure and having all the quarterback hits and all that. And now they don't have that source at all. And now they're having to cover for, you know, 5 seconds and that sort of thing. And unless they play a lot of zone or soft zone, which you don't really want to do because you have, like we talked about, where you have so much issues with turnover in the secondary and you can't pass guys off. Like, I don't know, they're just going to have to score a lot more points, you know? I think that's really all it comes down to.
Yeah, and let's go back to this game. The whole theory about this game was it was the same thing with Jacksonville.
We're play going keep to, away, well, control the
we're
ball.
We're going to play. Oh my God, it drives me crazy to think about, oh, that's going to be a real thing that we can do, because Baltimore is so explosive. I mean, just look at that one run that you posted on Twitter that Lamar Jackson had when he broke, what, 18.4 gigawatt tackles on that play.
He victim on, I mean, that play. He victim.
All of them.
That play is absurd too, because like, I've never seen a rushing play where it's like, yeah, we're going to let two guys go unblocked, and we'll pull both tight ends that split back formation up into the open field, make blocks. And Jackson's just absurd and breaks a tackle in the backfield, runs past Omenehu, and then like splits two other tackles down the field too.
So, I mean, we're not playing Jacksonville and their whatever 38th by DVOA offense. You can't do that against teams like this. Houston should have been out pushing the ball downfield. We weren't doing that again. When you look at Deshaun Watson's, especially in the first half, when you look at his passing numbers, he's not pushing the ball downfield. We had to push the ball downfield. That was a necessity to win this game. And once again, Bill O'Brien did not do that. And you can get...
Well, I think like we talked about earlier, though, like, well, again, but like they just ran the same plays they ran against Atlanta and against Indianapolis, and they weren't doing anything new. And I think it also goes back to like the Jacksonville game. Watson attempted 0 pass over 20 yards that game. 0. And it's like, you can't just like flip the switch on now that you're down by 21 and be like, okay, now we're going to throw the ball deep and we're going to have to make some things happen. You have to be doing that week in and week out so that whenever you're prepared and come in these opportunities, you're prepared for it. And it reminds me a lot of last year too, whenever they played all the bad passing teams and they kept doing their thing and winning close games. And it's like, oh, now Sam Darnold's throwing the ball on you. What are you going to do? And it worked then, but it didn't work in the playoffs, and they're down 21-0. And they're not taking advantage of like the worser matchups make their team better for matchups like this.
Yes, thank you for correcting me. You're exactly right. But this was not a game. We could not do what we did against Jacksonville, and I guess we kind of didn't. So I'm going to concede that fact, and let's move on.
Okay. The last thing I wanted to bring up here was Baltimore's rushing attack. So Lamar Jackson, 9 carries, 86 yards, long of 39. Gus Edwards, 8 carries, 112 yards, long of 63. As a team, they ran the ball 36 times for 263 yards, 1 touchdown, a long of 63. Now, what'd you think about the Texans' run defense? Because this is, last year was an all-time great run defense. Now, we talked about it too, like, without Watt, the run defense is still going to be good. Watt wasn't even really playing the run all that much. And they're 6th in defensive DVOA entering this game. What'd you think about the run defense in this one?
Well, it was ugly. I mean, clearly. So, but not only did we lose Watt from last year, we lost Clowney from last year.
And Jackson.
And
I always forget about him. It's sad.
And even Andre Howell. I mean, you know, Howell at least did his job on defense. So it was ugly for a lot of reasons. And, it's just sad. It's really like God, I don't even have the words. We've gone from a historically great run defense to stopping Leonard Fournette at the half-yard line to what happened today. And I'm not sure if what happened today is necessarily an outlier at this point in time.
I think it's a for sure outlier. This is the best run offense in football. It's also like it's an historic run offense too. Like last year, the Rams finished first in run offense DVOA 21.3%. Baltimore's at 20.3%, and the best run offense before that point was Seattle in 2014. They're at 27%, which is really surprising to me. I didn't think that Marshawn Lynch was ever like that. Rushing attack was ever like that dominant as it was. But I do think the Texans' run defense played well against when Baltimore ran the ball in the interior, like when it was power or lead up the interior. I think they played those plays really well. The issue is that whenever it's like, oh, here's zone read at Whitney Merciless, and he doesn't have the speed to play both the handoff and Jackson at the same time. Oh, and here comes a puller around this side, Omine, who's stuck, and he's getting cleaned out. That was where the problems came from. But like as far as just like vanilla, you know, here's an inside zone play, I think they handled those very well. I think the run defense is still going to be good from here on out. It was just like all the Baltimore, just madhouse, you know, Greg Roman is the only true god. Run offense, that was the stuff that they had problems with, though.
Yeah, and we're sixth in rush defense DVOA, but we're kind of in a pack. So, I mean, it's not truly, you know, it's not where we're used to be. And we're going to get moved off this a bit, but I don't know. You see, teams see how to beat us. I mean, that's the problem is we are being exploited in a number of ways in these games.
Mm-hmm. Also, Lamar Jackson's passing chart is pretty funny. Like, just who he threw to. Andrews had 4 catches. Ingram had 3 catches. Ricard had 3 catches. Ricard weighs like 312 pounds, and he carried Denardrin McKinney. I've never seen that before. I've watched
McKinney. And he played nose tackle.
Yeah, and at Maine. Yeah, I've watched McKinney make like 400 tackles. I've never seen him get carried. That was unbelievable. Marquise Brown had 2 catches. Boyle had 2 catches. Hurst had 2. Roberts had 1. Snead had 2. Hill had 1. That's like 9 different guys who caught pass this game. And Baltimore's like, I mean, this is probably my favorite thing I've ever watched, just how cool their offense is.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. So for me, just to say, because I've been touting Watson as the MVP all season for a while, I guess, for the last few weeks, I think he falls out of that race at this point in time. I think it's clearly Lamar Jackson.
I think it's Wilson still.
Oh, and Wilson, yeah.
I mean, like Seattle hasn't been good aside from his deep passing, really. Like, he's carried that team. Jerron Reed being bad's helping out their defense. Like, he was actually good against San Francisco, which helped out Clowney immensely, you know?
Yeah. This makes me sad.
Well, let's make you more sad. So, Barcavius Mingo almost made a play today. If you go back and watch the fake field goal, you see Mingo come from the right-hand side. The holder has the ball. Mingo's trying to chase him down from the backside, but A.J. Moore made the play and took all the glory. And I was dying for it. I was like, come on. Give me the big play, Mingo. We didn't get it, but hopefully soon enough we will. Jacob Martin did nothing. He got crop dusted by Lamar Jackson. There was kind of like that cute idea, like maybe you have him spy Jackson, run around with him. It didn't work, and they didn't really try at all. And then Gerrion Conley, and this was one thing I really wanted to bring up, like he's been like Sharice Wright this season. Go back and watch last year. Watch Sharice Wright run back and deflect passes after getting beat at the catch point. Go back and watch Gerrion Conley in that Jacksonville game. He had one good coverage play. Everything else is game beat where there's a drop pass, a poor throw, or he's chasing back and making plays on the ball. Same thing against Tyrell Williams, too, against Oakland. And one was like a bad defensive pass interference penalty that wasn't called. But remember, the refs only hit the Houston Texans. And so like Conley now, he has that play against Seth Roberts where he gets beat. And like he knows he's beat, too. It's kind of fun to watch again. Or he's just like standing back watching Roberts go to make the catch. And then, like, trying to time exactly when he does it, and it's a touchdown. And so, I don't, like, there, like, you mentioned, there just isn't a, very many good players in this defense anymore. And I don't think Conley's a very good player. I think a lot of the stuff he's done so far this year has been, let me open my thesaurus real fast, paritic so far. I think that's the best way to describe his play.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So Conley's, you know, the knock against Conley is the Raiders are making him play zone. He's better at bumping man coverage.
He's playing man. He's playing man.
I don't think
Houston.
He can play any coverage. Yeah. He can't play any coverage.
Yeah. Yeah. He played man. Even that touchdown he gave up against Roberts, he's playing man coverage. That's not zone. He misses his jam and he's chasing and then he watches and tries to play the ball and can't. But yeah. So all around, just kind of a bad week. You see Clowney in Seattle. You see these three guys. You see Lamar Jackson run rampant. You see like a lot of the things that we talked about in the previous weeks. You're like, yeah, like it works because of these circumstances. Let's see what happens whenever they play Baltimore, Indy, New England, and here we are. And I think the best way to sum up like a lot of the conversations that we have on the show is that I was listening to Mike Meltzer podcast. This is Mike Meltzer quoting Jeff Van Gundy that you don't want to ignore the things and losses that you would make a point of, or you don't want to ignore the things and wins that you would make a point of in a loss. And that's what I think we do a lot of time the show is that, you know, in a football game, a big part of it is the opponent and what they're good at doing. And you have to play, you know, based off that. And so like a lot of the stuff that, you know, I think the Texans have been doing and a lot of the kind of the discussion as well too, that, you know, that we all have with each other is that a lot of the problems are just ignored because they're winning games and they won three games in a row and they won three out of four games, or they won three out of four games. And now that, you know, they lose a game like this, it's like, yeah, like these problems have been there. They've been there for, you know, the last month or so. The difference is that they're playing teams of bad linebackers and, you know, they had some things go their way. They won some coin flips and whatever. And it's like, now here we are and like, oh, the sky's falling. This is a, you know, completely awful, terrible team now because they lost this game. But like these problems have been there. They just didn't have the right matchups that could exploit them.
This team is almost 100% reliant upon Deshaun Watson being a wizard. And that's no way to win games on a consistent basis. And so that we have a game like this is not a surprise. Our defense is not good. The offense, aside from Deshaun Watson, is not good. So, you know, you can look at this team and say, on paper, we're 6-4. We're second in the AFC South. Like, we can say all these really nice things about the Texans, but the fact is that, you know, there's enough holes to exploit that this team's easily beaten. And today is a case like that. And you cannot rely upon Bill O'Brien to out-scheme the opposing coach. We beat the Chiefs. They did not have a healthy Patrick Mahomes. They did not have Chris Jones. We're going to get lucky every once in a while, but look, luck is not a plan for success.
Yeah, and Watson's so good that he can make up for a lot of that as well. But whenever you play against the best, I mean, I guess Baltimore is the best offense right now. And the defense, you didn't hear their pass defense since they got traded for Marcus Peters. He did a great job against Hopkins today, too. But yeah, this is their pass defense entering this game with Peters. Completion percentage of 56.4%. Three touchdowns, three interceptions, five sacks, 5.9 yards an attempt, an average game DVOA, a -34.2% in their pass defense. And this was against, you know, Seattle. This was against Cincinnati. This was against some other team. They played three games with him. Their pass defense has been dramatically better with him. And, like, it's kind of funny, too, because Houston traded third-round pick for Conley because they came from a year and a half, and you see Baltimore get Peters, and Peters has been a much better player.
Yeah, Baltimore's defense has dropped from, I think, 24th-ish to 14th over the past, like, 3 weeks because of Marcus Peters.
Yeah.
I mean, in large part because of him, because he's really shutting it down, and he's picking off passes and returning them to the house. Mm-hmm. That helps.
Well, and they have four cornerbacks. They have Brandon Carr. They have – are you ready for it?
Who's
you ready for all four?
14 years old.
Yeah, they have Marcus Peters, Jimmy Smith. And they got Marlon Humphreys. And I hate Humphrey just because he wears number 44. And so I'm like, right. Do they have a linebacker named Humphrey too? And it's always confusing. And on top of that, Chuck has played very well. I think it's Chuck Clark. He's played well at strong safety. And then, you know, Earl Thomas is like, you know, a single high, you know, extraordinaire still too. So, I mean, it's either them or New England, the best secondary in football. It really just depends on what you pick. But yeah, like this pass defense is really good. Even without pass rush, like they have like a really great game plan. It's like, yeah, we can get the third down, we'll blitz, and we can play man coverage and be okay.
Yeah, and Matthew Judon is a much better single. If you've got one guy, he's a much better guy to have on your team than Whitney Mercilus.
Yeah, because he wins with power, and he can get to the quarterback quicker. And he's, like, mm-hmm. really good at picking spots like that. So the other thing I want to bring up, because it's fun and make fun of box score analysis, Laremy Tunsil, Texans give up six sacks today. They gave up seven. Watson was sacked six times, five times in the first half. Trey wasn't worth it. Gave up six sacks today in a must-win game for a potential bye. Trey's not worth it. Laremy Tunsil's overrated.
Here's where I keep going is this team has so many holes. I mean, cornerback, we need safety help. We need linebacker help. We definitely need somebody who can get to the quarterback. We have no draft picks for the next 3 years or 2 years. I mean, we have no draft picks. Who are we going to take? We're going to have to go out in the free market. Oh my God. This team, Bill O'Brien burned this team to the ground to win in 2019. And we're going to turn around in 2021 and go, what?
Yeah. Yeah, oh no, I don't want to talk about the future that far. I'm all about right now and at this moment. So I had some really great listener questions for tonight's show. The first one's from, I don't know, should I say the Twitter part in black or the at sign? What should I say here? Should I say the at?
No, you never say the at. Just say on Twitter it's...
Okay, so it's Pacho. He said, should Bill O'Brien be fired? That's our first question for tonight.
Si, arita, angale.
Yeah, I mean,
Spanish speaking people, and yes, right now, let's go.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I wouldn't fire him in the middle of the season, but like, I think we talked about the Colts game. It's like, yeah, I think there's a legitimate ceiling here with him as the head coach after the Colts game that he's not going to be able to, you know, out coach and out scheme teams whenever the talent's close. And like, even with Watson, like, that season shouldn't have played out the way it did. The next question we have here is from Antonio Almeida. Should you cancel the pod? Discuss what? Now, let me tell you something, Antonio. We're never going to cancel the pod. Our lives are beautiful and meaningful because of the content we create, because of listeners like you who listen to the podcast. So, no, the Texans could be 0-16. I think the podcast would be even better if the Texans were 0-12, and we'd get really nihilistic and existential and really awful and terrible. But, no, we can discuss so many things.
Yeah, it's really hard covering this team when they're so mediocre, because you have like one extreme, which is people who think like Bill O'Brien is God, and you have people like me that think that we don't go anywhere with Bill O'Brien, and it makes it really difficult to cover this team like this, because like Bill O'Brien has one good game, and everybody's like, oh my God, Bill O'Brien, savior. And then there's like me that's like, well, we're going to have a week against the Ravens like this. And we did.
Yeah.
And so that mediocrity makes it really difficult to cover this team, because there's so many competing kind of aspects to it. But are we going to cancel this podcast? Magic 8-Ball says all signs point to no.
Yeah, I'm going to curse you, right? I'm going to go with fuck no. How about that? The next question we have here is from Steve Dent. He asks, this is a really good question, though. He said, why do the Texans never elevate their game in big spots? Emotionless effort on both sides. And like, this is even like a Bill O'Brien thing. This is just kind of like the franchise in general. Like, whenever they play these big games, they just kind of fall flat. You can go back to, you know, 2012. Like, 2011 is completely different. They elevated their game. You know, they had that bad stretch run. That was 12, and they lost to that crappy Minnesota team, where they lost to, what was that quarterback? Christian Ponder. And they lost to Ponder, like, week 16 at home. But, yeah, like, even that season, that game against New England, you know, the famous letter jacket game. And then you also had the game against New England in the postseason as well, too, where Daniel Manning returns that kick to, like, the six-yard line. They kick a field goal, and the game's over at that point. And, like, consistently, like, they have these big games, and more often than not, it's kind of, like, flat and kind of listless. And even did you see some of the videos River posted today for, like, the players in the locker room? Like, they asked him, like, are you shocked by what happened today? And, like, shocked? Like, it's football. This happens sometimes. Like, Laremy Tunsil saying that and stuff. You're like, I don't know, man. Like, I understand this is where a thing happens, but, like, really? Like, that's your response to losing 41-7 on the road when you're all on this season, and you have this quarterback on this contract, and like you should be, and you're talking about being a Super Bowl contending team.
I'm just going to blame it on millennials and avocado toast.
I like
That's
it.
That's my answer.
I like it. My kombucha. Hey, the reason why you can't buy a house is all that kombucha you're drinking. I see what's in your recycling bin.
Oh my god! I really think our, like, in this house, our monthly kombucha spend is like seriously $100. It's like crazy. It's mostly me. Anyway, if you're a player and you're shocked by a game like, or you're not shocked by a game like this, I think the issue's on you, and I think it's a locker room thing. But if, look, we can talk about, you know, Bill O'Brien and all these other things, is that this is a team that's always lacked a killer mentality. We've always lacked it under Gary Kubiak, who was super conservative, even this new kind of version of Bill O'Brien, who is not as conservative as he was the past 5 years. They've always lacked the killer instinct. But the problem is that you have a game like this where Bill O'Brien, like, comes out with the same old shiza that he's come out with the past 3 weeks, and it shut down easily. And then it's like, oh, God, they shut me down. What do I do? And there's absolutely no adjustment. So if you want to look at what the Texans fail at most of all, and then, of course, there's forgetting his name, the defensive coordinator, red carpet.
Oh,
I can't believe
before Wade Phillips.
Nah, not Wade Phillips.
I said before.
Yeah,
Wade Phillips.
Yeah, the dude before Wade Phillips. Yeah,
wasn't Frank Smith?
Was it Frank Smith?
I think so. I think it was.
Frank Bush.
We got it. Yeah.
Frank Bush. Where you had the red carpet defense. This team has always had like this one aspect of it that was always like super poor. Mm-hmm. The defensive team, the offensive side of the ball with the, you know, the old David Carr days. I'm sorry. There's always been one like really big weakness, and the ownership has always been okay with that. And that's a big problem for me, because we're still right now, we're in the Bill O'Brien days. We have Romeo Crennel, who's doing a killer job with absolutely no talent. And then we've got Bill O'Brien, who has all this talent on the offensive side of the ball, who is the suck. And so as long as ownership, the McNair family, is okay with that, then I think this is an expectation. We're going to be mediocre.
Yeah. That's good. I can't put any better at all. The next question we had here was from
that was like a total drunken rant.
I loved
so
it.
That's why you can't even beat that.
I loved it. I felt like you were sitting in your rocking chair, and I was in my overalls, just sitting cross legged on the floor. It's like, yeah. Tell me more about yesteryear. So the next question we have here is from Jay Mills. He asked, "Can the Texans still make the playoffs? Not looking good for a win in the next 2 weeks. I think it's exponents. No, parentheses, Colts, Pats." So, can the Texans still make the playoffs?
Who cares?
Who cares?
We're
going
to be one and done in the playoffs anyway. I mean,
they need it. Well, we don't want to have the Dolphins have, like, the 14th best draft pick. Hopefully, it's, like, the 16th overall pick.
And who are we going to, you know, beat? I mean, the Steelers are better than we are. The Browns are better than we are. And these are two teams that are 5-5.
They would beat the Browns. And I think they beat the Steelers, too.
Oh, with Garrett out. With Garrett out. If Garrett was in...
The Browns aren't going to make the playoffs. They're too stupid. They can't string together enough wins in a row. They're too dumb.
But and so are we.
But there's like there's at least like a slight, like, it's at least there's some like slight competence to it. You know, it's not like Freddie Kitchens. Like, it's very like get the bare most minimum out of it. You know, unlike the Browns where they can't even get that out.
Yeah, but we're not going to beat the Patriots. I mean, I don't think we can beat the Colts.
Yeah, and so they play on Thursday. I know we typically don't really preview anything, but I haven't even thought about the Colts really at all. I need to go back. I have no idea what happened that game today. It just looked like Marlon Mack was really good. The Jaguars linebackers are bad. But that being said, my big concern about Thursday's game is the Texans are playing against another defense. They're playing, you know, a top 10 pass defense that the Colts have now that Darius Leonard's healthy. And Jamal Sheard's actually cooking. Justin Houston's, like, used to play in that defense as well, too, and he's been great lately, too. And, like, they haven't covered well, but they have talent at the cornerback position. And Malik Hooker's back, too. And so, like, even they played 5 weeks ago, I was like, yeah, like, I understand the Colts' defense has given up points, and they're, like, 26 in DVOA or whatever through the first few weeks, but they've been injured, and they have talent at those positions, too. Like, Pierre Desir hadn't played well. Kenny Moore had been hurt and those sorts of things. But they're also playing against a team that Matt Eberflus knows how to play the Texans. He's done a great job at it. He shut them down last year, you know, two times in like a, in the span of a month. And so like now you're going from this Baltimore game where your entire offense that you've been running for the last 6 weeks looks like it's been figured out really well. And now you have 3 days to come up with something entirely different. And you have this much of a quick turnaround, and you have a defense, like you mentioned, I'm not gonna be able to stop thinking about that. Like it's a defense that has what, four above average players, five maybe. And so now you're switching over to that quickly in that short span of time. And so that's my big concern that I have for Thursday. Like I don't have a prediction yet, but I don't feel very hopeful about Thursday after just seeing like how like quickly Baltimore call into their offense.
So my inner mind is like picturing Matt Eberflus like just kind of drooling as he's like going, "Oh my god!"
Like
oh,
Pennywise
yes,
or something.
Yeah, something like that. He's just drooling, like, "Yes, give it to me, baby, give it to me."
Maybe we can get UT to make a it drooling Photoshop of Matt Eberflus,
and not the like 2000 version of it with John Ritter that wife watched the other night. That was terrible.
Oh, the 1980s one. The mini series or whatever, it's like 6 hours long.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's so campy. Yeah.
So the next question we had here. So I mean, I still think they're gonna make the playoffs. Like they're not going to like at least get the sixth wild card because they still get to play Tennessee twice and Denver, and I don't know. Tampa really scares me. Like I'm horrified of Tampa.
You don't think Tennessee's the BESFs are gonna beat us?
No, because they always beat them. You know what I mean? Like I don't know, like every time they play Tennessee, and like Mike Vrabel is not a good coach either.
No,
you know, it's like he's just a figurehead. Yeah, it's so funny to see their defense with like the same talent level drop off as bad as it did with you know Crennel up in the box and with Vrabel calling the plays. I can't believe we watched. I can't believe we watched that entire 2017 season. Like I wake up sometimes or like I'm sitting there in the afternoon. It's like, what was I doing like 2 years ago? Oh, I was watching Blaine Gabbert. Tom Savage Sunday 3:15 football,
and Tom Savage starting over Deshaun Watson
week one.
Still can't get over the, you know,
yeah. At least it took him a half to realize that was the only good thing about that. I was worried Savage would start like 5 weeks and they'd be like 1-4. Next question we had here is from Joe Barnett or Barnett, one of the two. He has a really cool picture. He's holding a badger in it. Love it. So, can Will Fuller and Jordan Thomas please return? How is that not an overturned non-PI call for a hop touchdown? Ineptitude officials really set the tone for this game. And we talked about that. Like, I disagree with that. You disagree with that. And, like, that I do think the Fuller thing's very important. Because since Fuller's been out, they stopped throwing the ball downfield. And I was looking at the numbers. Kenny Stills on deep pass attempts. You want to know what the numbers are?
Oh, please.
Six catches on seven targets for 220-plus yards and one touchdown. Like, Stills is a good deep threat. Like, just because Fuller's out of the offense doesn't mean it ends completely. And that's been really excruciating to see. And so, yeah. Like, I hopefully Fuller changes things. I mean, Fuller will change things, but I guess the point is that the offense shouldn't have been as limited as it was without him here.
Maybe the point is that Bill O'Brien doesn't understand that the offense is not limited.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's all the questions for tonight. You have anything else you want to add? yeah. So, and also Antonio, not to pick on you anymore, but talk about what? That's an hour of straight content. I could keep going.
Oh,
we should even be on the air right now, bro.
Oh my gosh!
We should even be on the air right now, bro. Hour and 3 minutes, easy. But yeah, that's all I have. I don't have really. I guess the last thing I wanted to add to was whenever we were making our picks for this game, I was like, you know, I think this is going to be you know a close game or whatever. But I'm picking Baltimore because they're at home, they've won big games before, and they have better coaching all around. And I just like assume like the magic of Watson could fill in the gaps and make it a close enough game. And I thought the defense matched up fairly well. I think it did. They covered the tight ends well. And I think like the head-to-head rushing was covered pretty well too, as all the other zany stuff that killed them. But yeah, like I wasn't expecting this at all whatsoever. And I'm not surprised the Ravens lost. Like the Ravens winning isn't that big of a deal. Or like in a Super Bowl contending sense it is. But in like a... wow, like they really lost to Baltimore. I can't believe that. That's not a surprise at all.
No, and I do have one more thing I'd like to add. Our friend Texan is going in for surgery this week, so good luck, dude. I know it's a big one, so take care of your bad self.
Yeah, good luck, big guy. I don't know if you're big or not, but you got champ. You got big guy. You stay tough in there. Listen to the podcast. Give it a review on iTunes. Well, Raptor surgery, pop up out of it. Hit that 5 stars. Hit the subscribe button. Tell your friends and family.
Full pimp. Full pimp.
For sure. So that's our show for tonight. And I don't know what we're going to do this week. The Texans play Thursday. I assume we'll probably record a show maybe Friday afternoon. And I'll probably record a preview show after that Friday evening too for the weekend. So whenever you watch, like, I don't even know who's playing next weekend. But whenever you watch, I guess, like, Dallas, New England, you'll know to watch or have a little bit more fun heading into it.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant, super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
So, In the meantime, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio. And thank you for being on tonight, BFD. And I forgot what I usually say. Is that it?
That I'm the sexiest person alive. That's it. That's how you end it.